parking lot, I understood Auntie's decision a little better. The difference between being principled and being pragmatic could sometimes be measured in miles. As I sank back into the driver's seat of my car, I released a heavy sigh. Holding out my hands, fingers outstretched, they shook badly. "Okay, Nina, your mind's clear. Get the autopsy report read. Then get half the rise out of Charlotte that you got out of Matthew, and you might just wind up with a confession."
38. Gray. I tugged the parlor doors closed, sealing myself off in the library. We'd arrived home from the police station hours ago, but the spinning wheels in my brain were just gaining traction. Did Annie's sudden presence in my life actually help me? A slanted thought. Broken. Even if Annie's actions had pushed me closer to getting help, AA, for instance, she was still a sociopath. Annie hadn't really done me any favors. Not on purpose. And mutilating Hattie after killing Paul suggested she wasn't finished. Hattie was the last of the yard cats, the only one to survive that year's tragedies and traumas. Like me. But how would Annie know that? I thought of Charlotte, the way she hated Hattie, hated when I brought her inside as children. But that was outrageous. She'd been allergic. She'd never do something so horrible. Would Mama? Would Tilda Palmer? In the grand scheme of things, Paul's death had been easy. Nina said so herself, a quick knife to the neck. All his suffering had ended days earlier. Me, on the other hand, my pain had only grown since Christmas morning. I had to do something about her. Annie wanted me to panic and grieve and writhe, like a hook-pierced worm. She wanted fear to permeate my flesh every waking moment, right down to the muscle like a confined veal. Everything she'd done had been designed that way. The phone call, vague and cautious, with no information or callback number. She meant to send me off the path, and she'd succeeded. When I played her message for the police, I took them with me on a wild goose chase, assuming my husband had run off to the Caribbean or the Azores or Italy with his mistress. Wincing, I let my leather purse fall from my unbroken shoulder. I sat it atop Daddy's clawfoot desk. Then there was Cirillo's. Annie didn't merely know how to push a person over the edge. She seemed to know exactly how to push me. And she pushed and pushed and pushed. The Riesling brought to my table courtesy of the house. Had Annie arranged that, too? No, that had been Luca Cirillo himself. The waiter had verified as much. I couldn't fall into paranoia on top of everything else. I shuddered as Annie's email came to mind. The wild goose chase to find Paul had only been half of what we thought. Maybe he hadn't run off with her, but she was his mistress. Or they'd slept together in the past, at least. The fact she'd saved the photos to send me meant she'd been planning this for quite some time. If not plotting to murder Paul outright, then torturing me in some way. And now she grew closer. So close she'd stood on this very property. She'd likely watched me in my bedroom from the courtyard while Hattie bled out atop the inlaid brick. I took a seat in the leather high-backed chair, sinking into its worn cushion. My arms goosebumped, and I grew expectedly thirsty. It was the afternoon, and a drink was completely out of reach. The pain pills burned off some of my anxiety, but I craved the glug-glug of an upside-down bottle. My thoughts darted to hand sanitizer, mouthwash, maybe even rubbing alcohol. If I just smelled it, I might feel better. I'm coming apart. I placed my palms to my cheeks and pressed inwards, shaking my head. I also craved information. I wanted to know who this woman was. If I stood any chance against her, I needed to know. And I planned to put up a fight. It had taken Paul's death and Matthew showing up at my bedside, but now I spoiled for one. For once in my life, I refused to go down easy. I wanted to get better, like Barbara, and I wanted to fight Annie, to the death if I had to. Daddy's portrait over the mantel caught my eye. Billowy tufts of white gave him a look like Teddy Roosevelt in need of a trim. I hadn't noticed it since being back. The last time I stood in the library, when Charlotte told me Paul hadn't come home, my mind had been twisted with panic and pills, a wet rag wringing fear from itself. No surprise I'd missed Daddy looming over the mantel. His nose, Roman, like all the men in my family, was capped by gin blossoms. What an ordeal that little detail had stirred. He'd demanded the artist touch it up, but Mama insisted it stay. The woman who polished the family's reputation so fiercely had passed up a chance to spit shine it further. I'd always wondered what her motives had been, why she'd wanted to reflect life as it was, rather than as Daddy wanted it to be. Likewise, I questioned why I'd been drawn to this room in the first place. I'd grabbed my bag containing my laptop from my bedroom, but rather than opening it there, I'd come down here. I'd walked past the landing mirror, this time looking into it, and come to the room where Daddy's portrait hung. I came down here because I wanted to rip the Band-Aid off. I needed to confront my enemy, Annie, and I wanted Daddy to see me do it. The man who'd buried everything so selfishly, who'd encouraged Mama to do the same. Whether he'd be proud or turn in his grave, I wasn't sure. I didn't fucking care. I closed my eyes, recalling what Daddy once said to me in this room, late at night. "You have to fight, Gray. Somebody knocks you down, you gotta fight." He'd slurred his words. The smoky tang of bourbon on his breath had stung my young eyes. I hadn't been sure to what or whom he was referring at the time. It could have been anything. Contention had filled his life. His career path had been littered with fallen foes.
"We're kings, you hear me? We weren't put in this world to live up to its expectations. It's the world that needs to live up to ours."
I'd never made anything easy for anyone. I certainly wasn't going to stop now. Not with Annie. Not when it came to taking me down. As my computer powered up, I considered the possibilities. What were the sorts of questions police asked during homicide investigations? First, they always suspected the victim's significant other, the boyfriend or girlfriend, the wife or husband. But I didn't kill Paul. Then they inquire about enemies. They ask if the victim had any. Paul undoubtedly had enemies. A liberal lobbyist throwing his hat in the ring for Congress? There'd be enemies on every corner. But Paul wasn't the only intended victim here. The question now was, what enemies did I have? With my drinking, I'd managed to anger more than a handful of folks up and down the East Coast. But my run-ins were of the casual sort, nothing resulting in a burning desire for me to suffer endlessly. The D.C. museum director who fired me, for example. Only one person kept coming to mind. One person I'd angered enough, and enough times, to want me dead. That person was Paul. And if I'd made him mad enough, then maybe he communicated that to Annie. When he wasn't mockingly calling me hummingbird during pillow talk, he might have expressed his fatigue with my behavior. I found myself back at square one. The lover was usually guilty, and this case seemed no different. More than likely, Annie had killed Paul. But who the hell is Annie? I stared blankly at my welcome screen. A balmy 68 degrees, according to my weather app. Partly cloudy. No new emails. Headlines from around the world, the typical mix of depressing and even more so. As I bit my thumbnail, a thought occurred. The security firm. The one Lawrence Cooper hired to assist with Paul's case. I assumed they'd been called off because Paul was no longer missing. They worked for Lawrence, not me, so it didn't seem strange to not have heard from them. And besides, my mind had been so frantic, they might have checked in with Mama, and I missed it. But none of that mattered. They'd been working alongside the police. How much coordination occurred between their contractors and the Elizabeth County Sheriff's Office? Were they still on the case? Did Nina tell them about Annie? They were an unexplored lead, and if I could get an investigator on the phone, I could ask what they'd learned. Maybe they'd ID'd Annie, or at least had a short list. I couldn't recall the firm's name, so I typed Cooper and Waters, security contractor, Paul Godfrey, into my search browser. Surely there'd be an article or something naming them in the context of Paul's case. I'd spoken briefly to a man who said he planned to travel to Elizabeth himself. If I couldn't remember the name of his company, I certainly wouldn't know his. But if I saw a list of employees, perhaps I could pick it out. Bingo! Security Solutions. I clicked on the link to their website. I scrolled through contact information for Security Solutions Investigatory Services. I recognized Andrew Huang's name and dialed his number. An administrative assistant answered on the third ring.
Andrew Huang's office, Robin speaking. How can I help you?
During my brooding, my throat had grown dry, and my voice caught as I started to speak. I coughed instead.
Hello?
Yes, I'm sorry. Hello? I cleared my throat. I'd like to speak with Mr. Huang, please.
I'm afraid he's on a call at the moment. Can I take a message?
I hesitated, suddenly feeling a bit foolish.
Sure, I answered. Could you tell him Gray called? Gray Godfrey?
The woman, Robin, asked. She sounded taken aback. The clamor behind her abruptly stopped.
Yes, that's me. Hold, please.
She clicked off, not giving me the chance to respond. A soft concerto played from the other side of the line. As I waited, Mama peeked in on her way out the front door. Cora and the twins trailed her.
We're taking the boys for an outing. Ice cream sundaes and a movie. They've been through the ringer themselves this past week, she said. I've also got some shopping to do.
We may be gone for quite a while. You'll be all right alone?
I nodded.
Charlotte should be back from the sheriff's office before long. Nina had a few questions for her. Nothing too serious, I'm sure,
Mama added, before heading out. Cora locked the door behind them.
Mrs. Godfrey?
A man asked, cutting off the hold music.
Yes,
I repeated.
This is Andrew. It's nice to hear from you.
He paused for a moment.
My sincerest condolences to you and your family. I've been keeping tabs on the news out of Elizabeth.
Thank you, I whispered as his comment sank in. You're no longer investigating? If you're only watching the news, that is.
I'm afraid not, Mrs. Godfrey.
Call me Gray. The taste Paul's last name left in my mouth had only grown sour, curdling like month-old milk.
Of course, Gray. As I said, no, we're no longer providing services. Not since news of Paul's death surfaced.
I see. That makes sense.
Is there anything I can help you with?
He sounded genuinely eager. I stiffened my back in Daddy's chair. Yes, actually there is. I was wondering if you might have found anything over the course of your investigation that pointed to Annie's identity. Andrew hesitated.
I'm sorry, who?
Annie? The woman who's been terrorizing me?
A woman's been terrorizing you?
His surprise came off as real as his eagerness had. I dug my nails into the palm of my free hand. Didn't you know? The phone calls, the car accident, the photographs? Another hesitation.
Mrs. Godfrey, Gray, could you tell me what happened? Precisely how this woman, Annie, has been tormenting you, if you don't mind?
I started from the beginning, from the innocuous voicemail left on my phone on Christmas Day. As I recounted the events for Andrew, my cheeks grew hot, first from the shock of hearing myself say them aloud, then from shame. As I finished with what happened to Hattie, anger supplanted all other feeling. A pause lingered on Andrew's end of the line. I assumed he took his time digesting the whole story. If it sounded crazy to me, I could only imagine how it came off to him, hearing it all for the first time. "And you knew none of this?" I asked. Nina must have withheld news of Annie from him. It had been withheld from the public, too. A police trap, maybe? If it came out someone knew about Annie, then they must be involved in Paul's disappearance.
"No,"
Andrew finally answered.
"No, I didn't."
As silence resumed on his end, I spoke up. "I'm sorry to bother you. I thought you might be able to help me identify the woman."
"I can."
"I'm sorry?" His response jarred me. Surely he meant to say... He repeated himself with certainty.
"I can help you identify the woman. Annie."
I said nothing, but my blood began to rush, reddening my face further. As my breath quickened, the receiver played my exhalations back like a static-filled echo.
"I don't believe Annie's name is actually Annie,"
he began as I held my breath.
"What do you know about Paul and your sister? How much do you really know about Charlotte?"
39. Nina. As I turned the corner towards reception, I spotted Gray's sister. Charlotte leaned on the front desk with one elbow as she signed her name onto the clipboard sitting there. "Charlotte," I said tersely. "Follow me, please." "Hello, Nina." She started to smile, but stopped when it became clear I wouldn't be returning the gesture. As we strolled through the office, we passed the fishbowl to my right. Her head turned as though she expected me to lead her into it.
"Are we not speaking in there?"
she asked, her tone wary. "No," I replied. She hesitated, my answer clearly unsatisfying.
"But didn't you ask me here to talk? That's where we spoke last time, and that's where you've spoken to the rest of the family."
It was unusual for someone to show concern for where I opted to speak with them. But Charlotte wasn't usual. She had something to hide, and someone with something to hide would be shaken by the unexpected. Even something as insignificant as a room change. It only solidified my read of the woman. At the very least, she had conducted an affair with a married man, her sister's husband, her sister's dead husband. And the worst case scenario? "We'll be chatting in a formal interview room," I replied, holding open a heavy door to a second hallway. As I beckoned her through, she fidgeted with the strap of her purse. Her eyes darted from one direction to another.
"A formal interview room?"
Her voice cracked like a fallen vase. "Yes," I answered, matter-of-factly. "This is a formal interview, recorded, etc."
"Recorded? You never said anything about recording our conversation. You asked me to come in for a chat."
She paused, gulping, perhaps.
Do I need to have an attorney present?"
I opened the interview room door, revealing a cramped space with a single table against the wall and plastic chairs. "You're welcome to have one present if you'd like, although I'm unsure why you would need one. If you did, it might change my approach." Hovering in the doorway, her mind appeared to race, likely second-guessing every decision she'd made before this moment. Perhaps even the ones that had gotten her here in the first place. Her eyes went to the ceiling, to the camera with the blinking red light perched in the corner. "Charlotte, would you like an attorney present?" I asked for the camera's benefit. White-knuckling the strap of her bag, she said,
No thanks. That won't be necessary. Not for a chat."
She came off as genuinely nervous. But if she was playing a part for me, I recalled the ease with which the woman had lied to me in the past, Florencia. "Have a seat, please." I motioned to one chair and took the second one for myself. Her folder sat waiting on the table. I reached for it. Charlotte blinked at me in silence, She let her purse slide to the linoleum floor. After half a minute or so passed, I spoke up. What can you tell me about your relationship with Mr. Godfrey? She bit her lip.
He's my brother-in-law.
Was my brother-in-law.
You know that. I thought you'd want to talk to me about Gray.
We'll get to Gray, I interjected. But right now, I want to know about Paul. I want to know about you and Paul.
There's not much more than that.
I shifted in my seat. Let me adjust my question. I want to know about you and Paul from you. Charlotte tensed her jaw.
I don't know what you mean.
Well, let's see. I've heard about you and Paul from others, and now I want to hear about you and Paul from you. She ground her teeth as she spoke. Confusion, pretend or otherwise, marked her face.
Me and Paul? Others? What others?
From the private security firm contracted by Cooper and Waters, for instance. I flipped my folder open on the table. A printed email sat deliberately on top.
The private security?
As her voice trailed off, she grew pale. Even her lips purpled. They conducted forensics on Paul's devices, his work devices, personal ones in the Georgetown place, all of them. I tapped the printed email with my index finger. Her bottom lip trembled. She looked as though she wanted to say something, but then thought better of it. You lied to me. I know about the affair, Charlotte. There's a paper trail, emails, phone calls, receipts. I know that's why your husband left you.
I don't... How?
She stuttered. Her eyes searched the paper beneath my finger. She wanted a closer look, to read exactly what it said, but I kept it at arm's length from her on purpose. Bank card receipts. They place Paul physically in Raleigh. At times, Gray believed him to be traveling on business, to Canada, funny enough. Still only wide-eyed silence from Charlotte. Clasping my hands together, I leaned forward. Do you know what that means? Shivering, she managed to shake her head. A damn good actress. It means that in addition to you also being at Ruby's the night Paul was murdered, you were his mistress. How do you think that looks? She rubbed the back of her neck, maybe to stifle the tick she'd begun showing. I glared at her now. Tensions ran sky high that night. An intoxicated Gray? Paul flying into a jealous rage over her and Jacob? Tell me, did you fly into a fit over Paul's jealousy towards your sister? She shook her head.
No,
she answered, hardly above a whisper. Rubbing my palms together, I softened my expression. If you did, I can understand why.
What?
She met my eyes.
Why?
After everything that's happened to you, you and Gray both, I replied. I don't only know about you and Paul. I know about Gray and Matthew. Your sister told me, and my aunt confirmed her account. If Matthew had a thing for children, then...
No,
Charlotte said sharply. She clenched her fists atop the table. Matthew never touched me. I sat back in my seat, folding my arms. You were so young, Charlotte. There's nothing you could have done. You were left alone and defenseless with a dangerous man, a predator. Something like that messes up a kid. They grow up with skewed ideas of right and wrong. Maybe they don't even know there's such a thing as right and wrong.
I said Matthew never touched me.
Her fists shook. Charlotte's eyes bolted from one side of the tiny room to the other, like a cornered animal just waiting for the walls to close in. the trap to spring shut with a metallic whine. I get Paul. I get why you blew up at him. Seemed like a real asshole when he was alive. But why Gray? Why torture your own sister? This Annie business, it's sadistic. Charlotte muttered, nothing coherent, her act unraveling in front of me. I pressed. And the cat. You need help, Charlotte. Serious help.
I love.
I can get you help, but you have to start by talking to me. You have to tell me the truth, or I can't help you.
I'm not Annie.
As she spoke, a tear cut a path down her right cheek.
I love Gray.
She cast her eyes down as though ashamed to cry in front of me. Or maybe ashamed of what she had done? Was she still acting? If you love her, why hurt her? Why twist the knife? I asked, leaning into the table.
I said I'm not Annie, and I never wanted to hurt Gray.
She reached for the tissue box sitting flush against the wall.
Paul pressed so hard. It's almost like he wore me down. The worse things became between me and Will, the better Paul looked.
Her shoulders shook as sadness swept over her.
Paul loved Gray. He really did. But she's just so... She's got problems. More than once he called me her name by mistake.
Dabbing her cheeks, she coughed and continued.
The first time I figured it was because we looked so much alike. But then I realized he was with me because of our looks. I was the version of Gray he wanted. Put together, well adjusted. I don't even care for wine.
Sincere pain marked her words, and hurt hid behind her eyes. She appeared to love her sister while harboring feelings for the woman's husband. The situation she'd found herself in must have been impossible. But impossible enough to kill? Paul's stabbing had been a crime of passion, and passion poured out of this woman now. Launching into a second coughing fit, she shredded the tissue in her hands. I narrowed my eyes. And that night, what happened on Paul Revere Highway? Her eyes locked onto mine again. She spoke with steely determination.
I was never on Paul Revere Highway with them. I told you that from the start. I left the bar early. It was Christmas Eve, and I wanted to kiss my kids goodnight. Paul called me from the highway.
My mind switched tracks to Matthew, to the sexual abuse. And what about Matthew? You knew what he'd done to your sister as a child? She glanced at the ceiling and back at me.
Of course I did. I was young, but Gray and I were thick as thieves back then. She told me in her own way before she told Mama. We've spoken of it a handful of times since, but delicately, carefully.
He never touched you? I strained to hide the incredulity in my voice.
No. It makes me sick to say it this way, but...
Her next words appeared to genuinely pain her.
He only had eyes for Gray.
Did you know your mother had Gray tested for sexually transmitted infections? Charlotte sneered, eyeing the strips of tissue on the table before her. It doesn't surprise me. If she did, it's one of the few good decisions she made regarding that whole situation. Leaning in a second time, I added, I believe she had Gray's samples labeled as my Auntie Tilda's, so there'd be no record of it. Did you know anything about that? She shook her head.
I didn't, but that's not shocking either. You've met Mama, haven't you?
Who was the family doctor? The one who ran the tests? She glowered.
Dr. Connor. Mary Ann Connor. She has a practice on Main Street,
but she used to make house calls. I scratched a check mark next to the name Marianne Connor in my notepad. Two people now put her at Piper Point on the night in question. Confronting her was my next stop. Pushing the pile of tissue to one side, Charlotte pressed on.
I've told you what happened. I've told you what I know. I've confessed to sleeping with Paul, for Christ's sake. Do you know what it's like? To grieve in silence? To be Gray's shoulder to cry on while hiding my own tears? I've lost someone, too. I might have been a stand-in for Gray, a sober replacement, but I did care for him, Nina. There's a part of me, a significant part, that felt something for Paul. I still do.
I searched Charlotte's face for something to hang on to. Every crease, every wrinkle, every freckle. Something to let me know she was telling the truth. Or lying. It didn't matter which, so long as it was the right answer.
Can I go, Nina? Do you want anything else from me?
The bags beneath her eyes had grown heavier since we'd begun the interview.
Am I under fucking arrest?
Rubbing my temples, I sighed. Don't leave town. Do you hear me? She nodded. Say it aloud, I instructed, my own head whirling. Say you understand what I told you. She sniffed.
I won't leave town.
I exhaled shakily as Gray's sister vanished through the station's front door. I turned on my heels and headed back to Sammy. Interview with Charlotte's done, I announced, stepping into his cubicle. First one, anyways. She confirmed the family doctor, but otherwise stuck to her story. Wiretaps catch anything? Mother hasn't made any unusual calls. Neither has Charlotte, before the interview, at least. Certainly no calls from Annie, but...
But?
Sammy threw an edge into his voice.
Andrew, your pal from Security Solutions, took a call from Gray.
What about? I asked, crossing my arms.
She was looking for Annie's identity. Thought Mr. Wang might have gleaned something during his own investigation. Sammy continued. He drew a connection between Charlotte and Annie.
40. Gray. My eyes burned. My jaw tightened. My ribs could barely contain the swelling fire in my chest. Uncut, unadulterated rage. The quiet serenity of it frightened me. Silent anger. The closest I'd ever been to such a wrath had been witnessing it from Paul. Christmas Eve at Ruby's, for example. Even shit-faced, I saw how much he seethed that night. I could practically taste it in the air. And now I saturated the room with it, too. It spilled out from my eyes, leached from beneath my fingernails, slipped through the cracks of my grinding teeth, and it rushed toward Charlotte, my sister. After I hung up with Andrew Huang, I walked into the salon, where I took a seat on the couch facing the foyer. My eyes froze on the front door. I'm not sure how many minutes passed. The grandfather clock wasn't in my field of view, and if it chimed, I didn't count the number. Finally, the gravel outside crunched beneath Charlotte's rental. A car door slammed. Slow steps up the front porch. Keys jingled. Gray, she said, closing the front door. You scared me half to death. What are you doing sitting here alone? I said nothing. Felt only coldness as my fingertips tingled. Gray, did you not hear me? Are you okay? She paced towards me. I sat on the couch like petrified wood, ancient and angry. Did you have a nice time with Nina? I whispered. She nodded her brow, halting her steps. A nice time? Why would I? An uneasy silence passed between us. Her eyes grew wide as she pieced together what was happening.
She knew I knew. She knew I'd learned the truth about her and Paul. Her and my husband. Judging by her wary face, she wasn't sure how I'd learned. Undoubtedly, Nina had been asking her about it, too. Fatigue stained her eyes a pale yellow. I could tell she was tired of answering for it. I didn't give a shit how tired she was. Gray. Her voice caught in her throat. Gray, let me explain. How long? I asked. What? A sudden rush of fire burst through me. The rest of my body remained still as I screamed, How long have you been fucking my husband? Charlotte shook, losing her balance at my outburst. She fell back onto the couch opposite me. She began to cry. Gray, please, it's not like that. He loves you. He loved you. He just couldn't. Her crying turned to sobbing, and heaves chopped up her words into bits and pieces. Dismembered them. Reaching into the pocket of my slacks, I retrieved my phone. My shaking thumbs danced across the screen, opening the images from Annie@shadowmail.com. You sent these to me. I threw my phone at her. I intended to strike her face, but it hit her wrist when she raised her arm. No, she sobbed. No, I didn't. I'd never. I stood slowly. The phone calls, the pictures, the fucking cat. Gray, please, you have to believe me. Laughter rose from somewhere inside me. Cirilos, you put up such a fight over lending me your car. Such a fucking fight. You knew all along what would happen. You knew I'd drink. That's what you wanted. That's not true. Charlotte stood now, too. Did you kill him, too? Did you kill Paul? My eyes bulged in their sockets. My ears rang so loudly I expected blood to trickle out from burst drums. Did you murder my husband? She held the back of her hand to her mouth as though she felt sick. What makes you think I'd be capable of... I shoved her shoulder hard. Capable? What aren't you capable of? I screamed, pushing her a second time. She fell back onto the couch, rubbing her arm. How could you even think that? As I closed in, she drew her legs onto the cushion. She felt threatened. Good. My fist trembled at my side. Charlotte's eyes locked onto them. What the hell am I supposed to think? You're my sister, and you've been sleeping with my husband. My dead husband. I laughed a second time, shaking my head. The pictures? The disgusting pictures? When I lunged at her, she leapt over the back of the couch, stumbling towards the front door. I followed her, keeping pace. Gray, what are you doing? You know I didn't kill Paul. You have to know. Tears soaked her splotched cheeks. Her chest heaved as she tried to catch her breath. You murdered him. My voice lowered as the silent anger returned. Quiet, but I still trembled. You fucked Paul. Then you killed Paul. As I said the words aloud, I wondered what Charlotte must be thinking. Why I hadn't already called the police. If I thought she was Annie. If I thought she murdered Paul and didn't call them. It must terrify to wonder why not. Nina could handle all of this, but not the way I wanted it handled. Not the right way. Reaching the front door, Charlotte shook her head. The fear scrawled across her face told me she'd wondered the same thing. Hesitating for a brief moment, she turned and bolted outside. I started to chase after her, but froze in the open doorway. A surprising feeling washed over me, an entirely unexpected emotion. Relief. Not relief because Charlotte was frantically getting into her car or because I'd run her off. A different, truly horrifying sense of relief. I hadn't killed her. The invisible band around my head squeezed, and my entire body shook. I rummaged through a junk drawer in the kitchen, wet hands slipping from rubber bands to thumbtacks to what I was hunting for, a screwdriver. The wine cabinet was locked, and I planned to disassemble it. If I couldn't remove the lock, well, I just might break it. I'd do whatever the hell I had to at this point. I stood in the dining room, my memory snipped and restitched with pieces missing. I didn't recall walking here. I'd lost time before, but I was excruciatingly sober now. The liquor cabinet doors, one part ways off its hinge, swung open. On the table, a drink sat poured. A martini. As an image of Charlotte fumbling with her car keys replayed in my mind, setting the alarm off twice before she managed to get inside, I reached for the drink. A sudden vibration caught my attention. My phone rang against the hardwood planks feet away in the salon. I guess it landed there from where I'd thrown it at Charlotte. Next to a hammer. But I'd grabbed a screwdriver from the kitchen, didn't I? A voicemail. "Hello, hummingbird. It's me, Annie." When the hell had Charlotte called me again? While she barreled down the highway? The voice needled me, pricking me like a voodoo doll. "I'm sure by now you've learned I wasn't the only other woman in Paul's life. Your sister fucked him, too. Oh, yes, that's right. Me and Charlotte both. You see, my name really is Annie. There's no mystery to it. No pseudonym. No hidden identity. But on the note of what a sad sack of shit Paul was, I'm sure we both agree he deserved what he got. He deserved to die. You should have seen the look on his face when I did it. When the knife slid into his neck, his eyes bulged like they might explode. That look, the shock, the realization he'd been bested, utterly blindsided. Come to think of it, his eyes looked the same as they did when he'd come. Just saying it out loud now, it's making me wet. But enough about that. I've got my work cut out for me, hummingbird. See you soon.
41. Nina. Marianne Connor's practice sat downtown on a corner in a black shuttered single-story building painted pink. A wooden sign swung from a post out front reading, "Palmetto State Internal Medicine." Dr. Connor's name, second from the top. I left my phone in the car so Burton couldn't reach me. Matthew had called him and Jim's voicemail had been blistering. "You're done, Nina," he'd bellowed. I could picture the beet red splotches across his cheek and brow. "You're off, goddammit, you are fucking off this case." I'd hung up then. He was right. Completely right. But I decided to maintain deniability for one last interview before passing it off to someone whose judgment wouldn't be clouded, along with the tidbit about Joanna calling the police that night. Entering the waiting room, the citrus scent of mopped linoleum replaced the rain-soaked pine from outside. A heavy-set woman at reception swiveled in her chair as I approached. "Sign your name on the sheet and indicate which doctor you're here for." She tapped a clipboard with her pen. "If you're a new patient, there'll be additional paperwork." I reached into my pocket and produced my badge. "Detective Nina Palmer, I need to speak with Marianne Connor, please." My badge rendered the woman speechless. She'd likely never seen one this close before. Seeming to gather her thoughts, she replied, "Dr. Connor's with a patient now. Can I set you up in her office?" "That'd be perfect." I followed her through a side door and down a narrow hall. As the receptionist closed the office door behind me, I took a seat in one of two deep leather chairs before Dr. Connor's desk. Moments later, the office door opened and I turned around.
"Good afternoon, Detective Palmer,"
a silver-haired woman said in a voice like sweet tea.
"I'm Marianne Connor."
The enormous diamond ring on her finger
contrasted with the green costume jewelry around her neck. "Thanks for taking the time, Dr. Connor," I replied, brushing my thighs with my palms. She removed her white coat and hung it with the others. Taking a seat behind her desk, she adjusted thick-rimmed glasses, the sort that might be fashionable if you squinted.
"Certainly. I'm not sure what I can possibly help you with, but I'll do my best," she said, smiling.
"I appreciate that," I said, pausing for a moment. "If I'm not mistaken, you've been the King's family doctor for decades. I'm here to talk with you about the family. I have serious concerns." Marianne appeared to freeze. I'd never seen someone go so pale so quickly, except perhaps Charlotte. "Gray King Godfrey, specifically," I added, prodding for a reaction. Her silence grew uncomfortably long. Finally, she shifted in her chair and spoke up, voice catching at first.
"I'm afraid I can't discuss any patients of mine."
She drew a deep breath.
"Not from any point in time."
I leaned forward. "I'm aware of patient-doctor confidentiality. I'm also aware that when the well-being of a child is at stake, the confidentiality contract becomes void. In fact, you're legally obligated to report what you know."
"Mrs. Godfrey isn't a child."
"She was at the time you were her doctor." Dr. Connor's face went from shocked to irritated.
"I served the King family for quite some time. They trust me because I respect their privacy. Now, you're clearly here without Mrs. Godfrey's consent. She may have been a minor when I saw her, but she isn't anymore. If she needs information about the care I've provided, she can request it."
I brushed her response aside. "Let me try this another way. When medical disclosure is in the public's interest, you're also compelled to relay that information to authorities." She arched an eyebrow.
"Public interest? If there's a sexual predator, a pedophile at large, for example."
The woman swallowed loudly. Training my eyes onto hers, I continued. "Gray has made some allegations to me privately, disconcerting allegations regarding her cousin, Matthew. She claims he sexually assaulted her when she was 9.
"That doesn't involve me."
I sharpened my tone. "Except it does, Doctor. As I'm sure you're aware, my Auntie Tilda was caretaker, among other things, to Gray and Charlotte. It turns out she made some allegations of her own. When she discovered what had occurred, multiple times, mind you, she went straight to Seamus and Joanna." Dr. Connor's chest began to rise and fall more rapidly. Her reaction dashed any doubt that she hadn't known the truth about Auntie's samples. I went on. "Mr. and Mrs. King had their own concerns. Seamus was readying a presidential bid. Beginnings are important, and the attention from a story like that would have sunk his chances, especially at a fragile time." I folded my hands across my lap. "That's not to say they wanted to sweep the whole thing under the rug without at least some thought for Gray's well-being. According to Auntie, they barred Matthew from Piper Point. Seamus threatened to blow the boy's brains out if he ever came near Gray again." Dr. Connor's voice trembled.
"I still don't know what this..." "Charlotte Barfield confirmed you were in the habit of making house calls for the Kings," I interrupted. "And Auntie told me you made one the night it all came out. You tested Gray for sexually transmitted infections, didn't you, Dr. Connor? You tested a 9-year-old girl for STIs, and you didn't report it."
The woman's face hardened.
"That's not true. There are records. I tested Matilda Palmer, not Gray. Your aunt asked for the exam herself."
"Imploring me to check records?" This woman knew. She knew exactly whose samples she'd run. I shook my head. Drop it, Marianne. You labeled Gray's samples with my aunt's name, but Joanna knew the results would be her daughter's. I'm sure you all breathed a heavy sigh of relief when they came back clean. Dr. Connor stood.
I have to ask you to leave now. I don't want to talk to you any longer. You're welcome to speak with Joanna yourself, but
I'm not going anywhere. Not without answers from you. You broke the law. You endangered a child. Because of your inaction. Who knows who else Matthew assaulted? How many little girls he's hurt? You know he's got a daughter himself? She's about the age Gray was when all this happened. Name's Susanna.
Dr. Connor rested her hands on her desk as though to steady herself. Veins in her brow grew engorged.
Stop it!
Did you know Gray can't go a day without a drink? That she nearly killed herself in a car wreck down the street from this office earlier this week? Then there's the sister, Charlotte. Trust me, Doctor, you don't even want to know what she's become.
I said stop it.
Her whole body quaked, knuckles white on the edge of her desk. I kept my eyes locked onto hers. Look at the damage you've caused by staying quiet. Auntie also. She even took checks from Joanna for her silence. If I was a betting woman, I'd wager you have too.
You need to leave this office.
I leaned back, arms crossed, shaking my head. At least Auntie didn't let things go. She took matters into her own hands and made sure the world knew exactly what sort of folks the Kings were. But you were in a position to change everything, and you didn't.
God damn it!
Marianne shouted, slamming her fists onto her desk once, twice. The outburst knocked several photographs onto the floor, breaking their frames.
I made sure Gray was okay. I made sure there wasn't anything physically wrong with her.
I couldn't believe her excuses. Her reaction suggested she didn't believe them herself. Physically wrong? What about psychologically?
Dr. Connor said nothing. She released a heavy breath, regained her composure.
I got up from my chair, straightening my back. You need to tell me what you know, Dr. Connor. You've known her since she was very young. Through the ordeal with Matthew, through everything. Did you know about her alcoholism, too? Wiping her brow, she stooped to pick up the pictures she'd knocked over, then muttered,
Alcoholism? That's hardly all of it.
All of what?
Gray's problems.
Dr. Connor's unsteady hands dropped one of the frames a second time. I knelt down to give her a hand. This woman knew something. Something I didn't. The back of my skull tingled.
What are you trying to say?
What happened to that girl was terrible, no doubt about it.
She hesitated for a moment.
But it changed her.
Something like that changes a person, Dr. Connor. I'm not sure. She spoke slowly.
Changed her in ways I couldn't quite put my finger on at first. It's almost like Matthew.
Another long pause.
Like what he did blackened her soul.
An interesting turn of phrase. I saw the devil. I nodded my brow. Blackened her soul.
She became given to all sorts of outbursts and behaviors. She lied, too. That girl became the most destructive liar.
What sort of things would she lie about?
Dr. Connor brushed the front of her floral skirt and returned to her chair, broken frames now piled at the edge of her desk.
Absurd things. Some small, others not so much so.
Like what?
Oh, I don't know.
She paused, said,
Like those cats, for instance. A litter of kittens went missing one by one that year at Piper Point. Gray suddenly had scratches all up her arms, and when Joanna questioned her, she lied about where they came from. Every damn cat disappeared except the one Gray had taken a liking to. Hattie. Now, I don't know if she really had anything to do with the kittens disappearing, but that wouldn't be her most absurd lie. Once, when she was 16, she stood in this very office and lied about her name, about who she was. I reclaimed my own seat. I don't follow. Dr. Connor seemed to grow tired, perhaps even frustrated. She told me, tried to convince me, rather, that she wasn't Gray King, but another little girl. An alter, she called it. She insisted she had a particular dissociative disorder. Dissociative identity disorder, it's termed, and that Gray wasn't who I was speaking with. That sounds a bit far-fetched. An understatement, but something stirred in my mind. The inklings of something new. Something frightening. I couldn't agree more. DID is exceedingly rare and pervasively exploited. Dr. Connor tapped her nail to her bottom lip. After the media popularized the notion in the 80s, everyone seemed to have it all of a sudden. Everyone uncovered traumatic memories, buried deep. I finished her thought and used them as defenses in criminal cases. Correct, but I'm not inclined to believe it. I'm not a psychiatrist, of course. But the chances that Gray had more than one personality were too cosmically small to consider. But Gray, she simply would not drop it. She's a liar, but to go to such lengths? To keep up a charade for years? As she aged, Gray's lying became pathological. The wheels in my brain began to turn faster. Pieces started to click into place or at least draw closer to where they fit. If Gray was a liar, pathological as the doctor suggested, then everything she'd ever said to me would be in question. You mentioned trauma, I said. Trauma that catalyzes a disorder like that. Liar or not, her account of the abuse has been confirmed by others. Detective, Dr. Connor leaned in, lowered her voice. You said yourself folks use dissociative disorders and buried pasts in criminal defenses. I don't need to remind you that what you're dealing with here in Elizabeth, with Paul Godfrey, it's criminal. A sense of dread took hold, its claws squeezing my heart. As a question bubbled up in my mind, the walls of Dr. Connor's office darkened and closed in. The grounds swayed and swooned as though a fierce undertow had taken hold. Was it me who'd walked into a trap? A realization come far too late as it sprang shut? The alter. The person Gray pretended to be in your office. What was her name? Lips pursed. Dr. Connor paused for a moment, appearing to think. She called herself Annie. 42. Nina. I slammed my hands against my steering wheel 2-3 times. How could I have been so stupid? How could I have overlooked Gray? But then again, how could I have known this? In what universe would I even have suspected it? She'd been too drunk to do or remember anything on Christmas Eve. Everyone said so. Charlotte, Jacob, Jonas Hatfield. She'd admitted it herself right off the bat. But had I underestimated her tolerance?
After all, she'd been unbelievably intoxicated after leaving Cirillo's and yet still able to somewhat operate a vehicle. Of course Annie never showed up at the fucking restaurant. Different rivers of thought, each flowing separately since Christmas, began to merge. Auntie's checks from Joanna, Paul's disappearance and murder, Annie, Matthew's history of sexual assault. They were all one narrative. The story of one single person. Gray. As I reached to start my car, my cell phone vibrated on the passenger seat cushion. My racing heart stopped. 19 missed calls. One from Burton and the rest from Sammy. I dialed Sammy back, not bothering with the messages. He answered on the first ring. Nina! His voice was loud, loud and desperate. I started to reply, to tell him what I'd uncovered, but he wouldn't let me speak. The IMSI catcher, he exclaimed. The device we use to tap the cell phones at Piper Point. I held my breath. Annie called Gray again, he said. Annie used Gray's own cell phone to do it. How'd she? Gray is Annie. Silence on his end. Dr. Connor claims Gray used to call herself Annie when she was little. Nina, this is too far. Burton's on the warpath. He's taking you off. Sammy, listen to me. Annie called from Gray's phone. Forget the phone for a second. How the hell would anyone prosecute something like this? And Matthew, he rang up Burton, you know. Matthew. What did he say when I'd confronted him at the club? I'd brushed the comment aside, too focused on little Susanna King.